2008 World Champions of Baseball.
The Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions. Eagles fans everywhere, this is for you.
It's Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by the Irish Rover Station House in Langhorne, PA. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko, who's on vacation. He's traveling back from Nashville, so we have our good friend, Carl Henderson, pinch hitting tonight. Welcome back to the show, Big C.
Thanks for having me.
All
the
right.
Question
hey.
Is, am I in the two hole or the four hole? Where am I pinch
hitting?
You know
what? You're the cleanup man. When you bring the big swingers in, you put them in the four hole.
Okay. I just want to know where I'm at.
Hey, you know what? You know how having the big guys batting in the two hole doesn't sit well with me. So we're going cleanup man.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, hey, the Eagles go to Nashville. They let one slip away. The Philly season has come to a sad end. And I know one of your favorite times of the year, Carl, Flyers hockey starts tomorrow night in Vegas.
I got goosebumps. I'm listening to Gene Hart telling, you know, win the Stanley Cup, and I got goosebumps. I'm that excited.
Oh, there you go. Me too. You know, I guess I'm kind of a funny hockey fan. I'm not big on, like, on a football game or something. I sit and pretty much watch anybody. It's Flyers hockey for me. Sitting and watching the Blues and the Canucks doesn't really work for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same, you know, with hockey. You know, I obviously my allegiance is to the orange and black, but, you know, I mean, if I have nothing else to watch, you know, I'll look for it, just about anything to watch.
There you go.
You know, just like tonight. I mean, you know, the Capitals are kicking it off, and you know, you got to the first 15 minutes, you got to watch them get their rings and the ceremony and stuff. So I'll bypass that.
Well, that's we'll get to the Flyers a little later on, but hey. Before we get started, you've got a big weekend set up at Carl's Cards and Collectibles. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, we've got linebacker Nigel Bradham coming in Friday night. Pre-sales for that have been very good. He hasn't done a whole lot since winning the trophy. So we're excited to be bringing him in. It just seems the energy is still there. You know, people are finishing team pieces, and they just love meeting the players and, you know, congratulating them and just talking to them and trying to sneak in a photo here and there. And so it's Friday night's going to be jam-packed, and then we roll right into our annual Customer Appreciation Day on Saturday, which is generally a lot of fun. You know, we give away a lot of stuff. We have raffles, and we've got Philly's great Art Mahaffey coming in. He'll sit down for a couple hours and sign free autographs for everybody. We're just going to have a lot of fun. We're hoping it's going to be a nice sunny day on Saturday so we can do some things outside. So the weekend is jam packed. So we're excited.
Awesome. Hey, now you just had a signing a week or so ago with that Seth Joyner and Clyde Simmons game to Havertown. How did that go, and how was the fans' reaction to those two Eagle greats?
Seth is in town quite a bit, so he's usually around, you know, for people to have access to at radio shows and different things. Clyde, on the other hand, you know, was in town, you know, for the ceremony. So it was great. It was awesome to have them at the table together. People love that gangrene, you know, defense that went back to the Buddy Ryan era. Seth Joyner is a huge talker. He just loves to talk Eagles football. So he had it going on all day. Clyde's, you know, a little bit more on the quiet side, but, they all had some great stories, some really cool things going on, you know, guys that they, you know, talked about, and this is what was really crazy. Seth was a big you know, a supporter of Wes Hopkins and spoke so highly of Wes Hopkins. And then the following week, Wes passes away. I was torn apart by that. You know, it was just like, wow, where did that come from?
Wow. So they didn't indicate that they knew he was sick or anything.
No, I don't know. And I yet to hear anything as to the cause of death. No one's announced anything. I asked Derek on social media and he said he hadn't heard anything. So I really don't know. I mean, he was pretty young guy. He's 57 years old. So, but the Seth and Clyde were awesome. I can see why the Eagles wanted to bring them in together. The personalities of that defense, long overdue, you know, and I'm hoping bigger and better things for Seth Joyner. I'm hoping maybe he can, you know, make it to the big Hall of Fame, so to speak.
Right. Well, he did actually make it to the first list, right? The 102 or whatever it is.
Yes.
He did make that, but there's
yes.
a lot of whittling that goes to get down to the final
yes.
five or six.
Yeah. He's got some super numbers. I mean, he ranks right up there. So, you know, you look at some other guys that got there and, you know, you look at his numbers and, you know, you're kind of shaking your head.
Yeah. Well, not winning that Super Bowl certainly hurts them.
Well,
speaking of that, hey, let's start out and talk some about the present Eagles. 2-2 after losing on the road again. You concerned at this point? This team's banged up.
I'm concerned because they throw the ball an awful lot. I think they ran the ball 15 times and passed for 51 attempts. There's no balance there on offense. I really honestly believe they miss Brent Celek as a linebacker that would stay at home, tight end rather, stay at home and do all the dirty work on the line. You know, you got to protect Carson Wentz. If you're not going to protect Carson Wentz, he's going to get killed back there. And I don't like to see that. You know, they're banged up. They're banged up all both sides of the ball. You know, they're missing some key guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the pass run ratio, because that was a number that I wrote down here tonight to throw out as well. It really caught my eye. And here's what it is. The Eagles have thrown the ball 170 times and they've run 108. Not the ratio, the balance that you certainly would want. And Jay Ajayi is the leading rusher on this club right now, 155 yards in four games. That's 39 yards a game. You're not winning the Heisman Trophy that way, that's for sure. And you're not going to do well in the NFL either, rushing for just 39 yards a game.
Yeah, I just, you know, I know there's a lot of talk the past couple days about Bell from Pittsburgh, and I don't know that that's the answer. I don't know if the chemistry would work. I mean, he's a great player, but he's gonna have to have the ball all the time. And I don't know that that's the Eagles' offense. And I'm okay with the running backs that they have. We just need to get Corey Clement healthy. You know, somehow you gotta factor in Sproles. You know, he's the weapon that, you know, you can do a lot of different things with him, and you take him off the field and you can't replace him.
Yeah, absolutely. And to go along with that, Sproles and Clement both missed practice again today, as did Alshon Jeffrey, Fletcher Cox, and Derek Barnett all missed practice on Wednesday. That usually doesn't bode well for Sunday.
Yeah, I heard that as well. You know, I'm okay with Fletcher Cox and Alshon. They're veteran players. You know, they probably are a little nicked up, but I think they'll be ready to go for Sunday. You know, I just, you know, Corey scares me with that quad injury. You know what I mean? Those things can linger all season if they're not addressed properly. And you need him. He proved last year that, you know, he's a go-to back. And I just think they need to figure out this pass run ratio. But you know, let's take it a step further. You know, if Nelson Aguilar catches a couple passes on Sunday, we're not having this conversation tonight.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah, and you know, I think the defensive schemes, as you said, they're pounding on Carson Wentz, and they were pounding on Nick Foles too. You know, the scheme has to change. They're sending more guys than there are blockers. So you've got to keep a tight end in. You've got to keep a running back in. Somebody's got to pick up those blitzers and extra guys in the box so that Wentz has time to throw and not get himself killed. And so I think you're going to see a big adjustment coming out of Doug Peterson this week.
Well, you have to. And again, I see, you know, that's where you miss a Brent Celek because, you know, he's able to, you know, he can read that, you know, what's coming at the line of scrimmage and whether, you know, whether he needs to stay home and block or he can, you know, he can peel off and, you know, pick up those 10, 15 yard passes, you know, that he was always so good at. I don't know that the new rookie, you know, Dallas Goedert is on board yet. It's going to take time. So I hate to keep, you know, harping on the Brent Celek thing, but I don't know how much of a cap hit that was, but I think they surely do miss him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, wanted to ask you, what was your take on the defensive situation in Tennessee? They kind of let that overtime get away from them. They couldn't get off the field on third down or fourth down. And all they had to do was keep the receivers in front of them, in front of the goal line, and they win that game, even if they catch the pass. and they went into man coverage and got beat and got wide open.
They had this alignment. They had five across the field, you know, 15 yards off the ball. And I understand you want to keep the play in front of you, but, you know, you got to get up there and stop the man. Who got pushed over on that play? Darby, I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, you can't let that happen. You can't. And it happened all day, to be honest with you. I mean, more so in the overtime, but you know, I just think they were beaten down by that point. You know what I mean? They were some tired boys out there.
Yeah. I just didn't understand on that last play. You know, all they had to do, they would not have had time to get the field goal team on the field, and they wouldn't have been able to spike the ball because it would have been fourth down. But they turn around and they go into man coverage, and I just didn't understand that. And I'm sure Jim Schwartz is trying to figure that out too, because something went bad wrong there.
Yeah, I just think, could it be, where these D-backs are trying to do too much? You know, all of a sudden, Mills was great last year. This year, you know, he just seems like he's getting beaten on every play.
Well, they're not getting the rush. I think that's one thing, too, that they're not getting the rush. And now these guys out there in man coverage and different coverages that were pretty successful last year are not so successful this year.
Yep, you're exactly right.
So we'll see what happens. Does it get easier with the Vikings coming to town? We'll talk about that a little later when we make our selections. But, I think overall I'm okay with the fact. I think if you were going to circle a couple losses going to Nashville and going to Tampa, might have been a couple of them of the five or six that they might have. So I don't know if it's any reason to panic, but I think there's certainly some things that need to be improved upon, and they certainly need to get healthy.
I guess, you look at the way you lost, you know, because you just – those games were winnable, you know, especially the Nashville game. I mean, you know, it was so winnable. You know, you just let them, you know, dictate the game, especially in the second half. You know, Mariota was doing whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. And I just didn't like the way they lost. You know, that's
I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm with you. Well, hey, speaking of losses, so much to talk about the 2018 Phillies, but at the end of the day, they finished 80-82, 10 games behind the Braves. What do you make of the big picture? I mean, was there improvement? Do you see improvement? The record certainly was an improvement over last year. What's your takeaway as now you've had a week to chew on it?
Well, the past 3 days haven't been good around here. You know, you've got, you know, Kapler with his press conference on Sunday. You've got Matt Klintak with his press conference on Monday. And then today, or Tuesday, we had, the GM. We had the GM on Monday. And then, you know, you get the vice president, trying to cover everybody, you know, and threw a whole nother wrinkle, which kind of everybody took a step back, I think, you know, where, you know, he may have called out, you know, his manager and his general manager in a little, I don't know what you call it. You know, he said some things that kind of startled, you know, the press and the people that were listening. But I just, you know, the first half of the season, I was sky high. I mean, middle of the summer, I'm talking October baseball. I'm getting ready to buy, you know, my preseason or my playoff package. You know, I'm all in. I'm all in. You know what I mean? And then the bottom fell out. I mean, just absolutely, you know, the bottom fell out. You know, the young pitchers that, you know, I mean, Zach Eflin, he won 5 games in June. I don't think he won a game since.
Right.
And yep. I just think, you know, there were so many situations, you know, and you and I have talked about this, you know, plenty of times with, you know, 130 different lineup changes and just no cohesiveness, no consistency. You know, guys just not knowing if they're playing from one night to the next, let alone what position and, you know, what we're at in the batting order. So I just think there just wasn't enough. The second half, just, you know, that was a collapse of, you know, monumental proportions in my eyes, because I just think anything that could go wrong went wrong for them.
Yeah. And you know, and I agree with everything you said, and I guess when you try to take a step back and you say, you know what, this team won 14 more games than last year. I think if you sat here in the at the beginning of the season and thought that they would win 14 more games, you were probably the odd man out. But here they did. They won 14 games. And then you sit here and you think, you know what, they weren't a very good baseball team. And so I kind of tried to take a look back and say, how did this happen?
There's plenty of blame to go around. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I just, you know, I can't get past the manager, because I just, you know, baseball players, you know, sports players in general, they're creatures of habit, and they want to know, and, you know, they want to see, you know, the consistency of, you know, being in the lineup, batting third, batting fourth, playing right field, you know, no, not tonight, you're over and left. I don't see how you can be a good team defensively when you've got to practice all these positions.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, I know they're ball players. They get paid a lot of money. But, you know, if you come up as a second baseman, your whole life you've played second base, and all of a sudden they got you in, you know, all three different outfield positions. Oh yeah, come on in. We need you at shortstop tonight. I just don't see it, you know, getting any better if that's the direction that we're going to go. I really don't.
Yeah.
And I picked Scott Kingery out because, you know, I mean, they paid him a nice chunk of change at the beginning of the season, gave him a nice contract, and I thought he was the future at second base. And they were going to really honestly do something, you know, and move Cesar, you know, to generate that spot. But that never happened.
Right. Well, hey, I wanted to ask you, there was an interview on the radio today. I got to listen to it. I don't know if you did, between where Gabe Kapler called in to Angelo Cataldi to basically defend his boss. And that was quite an exchange between those two. Did you get to hear it?
Well, I guess it was all over. Angelo, I guess, wrote a piece.
Yes.
He wrote a piece, and I guess and Gabe is on that show once a week. So he's I don't know what the scenario is as far as, you know, the obligation, but you know, he's a regular on the show once a week, and he brings all that positivity and he brings all that juice every week. And I guess that's the thing, you know, that's kind of got everybody fired up. How do you define that? You know, where is that in this bad second half of baseball?
Yeah, well, and I thought it was interesting, and I thought Cataldi did a pretty good job with it, because he kind of could have piled on Kapler a bit, and he didn't, although he asked the tough questions, and he got tough answers. And I think Kapler did a good job of answering. I'm not sure you really want your manager and your radio morning guy, you know, in a dogfight on the radio, but I thought it certainly could have gone a lot worse. I come out of it. I still don't think Kapler's a very good game day manager, but I do respect him that he stood his ground and went toe to toe a little bit.
He did, and he said, you know, he said to Angelo, he said, you know, I'm not gonna get into this and debate with you and go back and forth on every, you know, every little comment. But he did defend. And I'll be honest with you, I think Angelo, you know, kind of let him off the hook a little bit, because I really thought he was going to tear into him, you know, based on, you know, what he wrote and what he had been saying on the airwaves. So I kind of think he backed off a little bit.
Interesting. Well, I'll tell you what, we've talked Kapler, we've talked Schwartz, we've talked Peterson, and right after our break, we're going to talk James Franklin and the Penn State Nittany Lions. So let's hear from the Irish Rover Station House. We'll bring our next guest on, and we'll talk some Penn State.
Hey, it's Chet, and by now you know how I feel about the Irish Rover Station House, a fantastic place for dinner or to just have a couple brews with your pals. The Irish Rover in Langhorne, Bucks County, has an extensive beer list, always 24 brews on tap, and daily dinner specials. Every Wednesday is trivia night, and this Thursday the Coors Light team will be there buying people beers and giving away some cool swag. There are always specials during football games Thursdays, Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays. Go check it out. It's the Irish Rover on Bellevue Avenue in Langhorne, and on the web at irishroverstationhouse.com.
Well, Carl, as I said, speaking of crazy weekends, how about what we saw in Happy Valley Saturday night with Penn State and Ohio State?
I'm still reeling over that last play of the game. I mean, come on. What was he thinking?
Well, I don't know, but we're going to find out. We're going to get some insights of what happened and the aftermath of it all from Fox 43 sports anchor Andrew Kalista. Andrew, welcome back to the show, and tell us what in the world happened. You know, I think you kind of have to start at the end of the game and work your way backwards to talk about this one.
Hey, guys. Good to be back. Hold on. I got some Penn State student here yelling at me. What? What? You didn't like that call? Yeah. Come down and tell it to my face. Sorry. I just had to yell at some student as I was getting in my car up here in Reading, Pennsylvania. How about that? Before we even get into the phone call, you're getting paid millions of dollars and you can handle some criticism? You got to be restrained? I mean, I like James Franklin, but that is a pathetic look for the university, and that's a bad look for him. He's got to do better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. He sure does. And, I mean, you know, I guess the end result. He had to know when the end result of the play was going to create criticism. But what in the world could he have been thinking to even call that play, especially after two timeouts?
Well, the thing that's kind of odd, it's not the two timeouts to me, because the first one, you're calling a timeout, you know, obviously to stop the clock and get your play right for the fourth and five. Ohio State comes out, they see the look, they take a timeout. So you got to assume Ohio State's going to come out with a different look. I don't really see much of a different look at all. Penn State takes a timeout. Okay, let's see it. What gets me, and I asked Miles Sanders and I asked Juwan Johnson in postgame, and people asked Trace McSorley as well, you know, there were multiple checks at the line. If you go back and look at that play, you keep seeing Miles Sanders jump. You see Trace making hand motions. He switches them from the right side to the left side at the last moment. So what call was actually being made? Was there multiple checks at the line? And all three people, including James Franklin, said, no, that was the call. And in fact, it was the call originally coming out of the first timeout. And I get it. I'm down there on field level. What's the most perplexing thing to me is on the drive before, with the same play called, an RPO, with pretty much, it was pretty much the same play call, just different window dressing. Trace McSorley keeps it and comes at Chase Young. Chase Young dominated the second half of that football game for Ohio State's defensive line. He was a one-man wrecking crew. He's the one that batted down the pass on fourth and one, keyword pass on fourth and one, after Penn State just ripped off a 12-yard run. But if he just stopped the drive before with the same inside stunt move or a similar inside stunt move, you're coming right back to that at the most critical juncture of the football game. It's either pick up five in an inch or you're going home a loser. And they chose to go at the guy who was playing lights out. And that is the most perplexing spot to me, because I could understand people being, you know, having the angst of why is that ball not in the air, which I get some of that angst as well. But at the same time, if you see something and you truly believe in something, then you go at it. I just have trouble believing that our best point of attack was going at Chase Young, who was physically dominating our offensive line from the middle of the third quarter on.
Yeah, it really, what surprised me more than anything was, why not put your best player, who Trace McSorley played just about as fine a game as anybody could play, put him back there in the shotgun, let him make a play. If he throws an incompletion, he throws an incompletion, but the ball was in your best player's hands to try to make something happen, because the kid just made things happen all night.
He did make things happen all night. That's kind of the gut-wrenching part, I think, that a lot of Penn State people are having trouble getting over. Let's be honest, Penn State's offensive line did not have a good game. They did not play their best. They could have played better. I thought they played better last year out in Columbus, and running the football even was and protecting Trace, especially after Ryan Bates went out, was a struggle last year. But at the same time, you got to think that if we could give Trace 2.5, 3 seconds back there to survey the field, he's going to make a decision and put the ball up where a Penn State wide receiver has a chance to make a play. And if he doesn't see a Penn State wide receiver with an opportunity to make a play, those little legs of number nine is somehow going to keep that play alive. And
right.
I'm a big believer in, I'll never say somebody's the best ever player. Somebody will ask me, what do you think of Saquon Barkley, best ever running back at Penn State? My response will be, we'll see. I'll evaluate that 4, 5, 10 years down the road. I looked at somebody on the sidelines after one of Trace McSorley's runs, one that was originally called a touchdown, but he was down at the half-yard line, and I said, he delivers an undefeated season, I'd be prepared to call him the best quarterback ever at Penn State, which I think coming from me is a pretty big statement, because I never say that. And to take the ball out of his hand in that situation, pseudo take the ball out of his hands, because he still does have the option to keep that right there. It is a little it is mind-boggling. It's almost as mind-boggling as you have first and goal inside the Ohio State 7-yard line last year in Columbus with a chance to ice the game, and Saquon Barkley doesn't touch the ball on first or second down. That was kind of mind-boggling to me at the time, but this one is mind-boggling to me on a higher level.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, there were two other plays that really stuck out to me, offensively at least. Obviously, the Miles Sanders fumble there before halftime that let them back in the game was a killer. The other one was Juwan Johnson should have caught a touchdown pass that he, you know, they made a big deal about the defender. Both hands were on that football. He should have caught that ball, and then we're not having this conversation.
he's admitted that as such in the post game. He said, I'm a senior leader. I got to do a better job. I got to do a better job making plays. I'll say this. These are college-aged kids. I get that they're, on scholarship and everything else like that. And Juwan's not had a season that is up to his caliber that he should be having, especially with the body type that he has and the frame and the skill set that he has. He should be playing better. But I'll give him a lot of credit as a young player, as a young athlete, I should say, to come out and face the music and face the media, because there's a lot of coaches in the professional world that don't do it, and there's a lot of players in the professional world that don't even do that. So I'll cut Juwan, and I think everybody should cut Juwan some slack, but he recognizes that he should have made that play because he has the skill set. We saw it earlier in the game when he pulled one down that he had no business pulling down.
Are you hearing this music?
I am not hearing this music.
Okay. I got music in my headphones, and I have no idea where it's coming from.
Hey, Andrew, this is Carl.
There you go.
Oh, Carl, how you doing?
Good. Hey, changing gears here for a minute. What was it like, 110,000 in the stadium, a whiteout? What was the electricity in the stadium? What was that like?
To start the game, it was right up there with any game you could imagine. I keep everything. The two games that I always go back to, now mind you, I'm 31 years old. The two games that I go back to 2002 Nebraska, the loudest moment you'll ever hear in Beaver Stadium. Now some of the old timers like my dad and things will say that when Bowman caught the touchdown pass against Nebraska in 82, that Beaver Stadium was louder. I still find 2002 against Nebraska the single loudest moment. Outside of that, you go to 2005 Ohio State. It was ridiculous, off the chain, nonstop energy that you could possibly imagine. There was just something about that. And I believe the weather and everything with the
mist. I was at that one too.
Yeah, that game was flat out crazy. But I'm going to tell you, the electricity that was in that stadium for the first quarter, right up until the Miles Sanders fumble, matches those two games. And the moment of the two, I should say, matches 2005 Ohio State. It was on par with the Richard Gardner interception in 2002 against Nebraska. But I'm going to tell you what, in the third quarter, if I don't know if the students are soft, if they're snowflakes or what. So what? Your team's struggling offensively. Get loud. You've been boozing all day out in the parking lots that you have to get, buzzed from the state police with tailgate debris flying all over the place. You can't be loud 14-13 football game. There's a problem because, I don't understand. I don't get that. That stadium should have been rocking in the third quarter, and it was not rocking in the third quarter. Did it pick up in the fourth quarter? Yes, absolutely. But, if you want to claim you're the best student section and you're the loudest student section in the country, you do it for all four quarters, especially in a one-point ball game, regardless if your offense is struggling to move the football.
Sure, sure.
Hey, Andrew, one final question because we're running out of time already. Week off this week, Michigan State next week. How do you see this team responding? This is a tough loss. How do you see this bunch responding?
Tough loss, and I know some people are saying like, oh, I wish the team would, be able to get out there, to get this one out. The win or lose on Saturday, this bye week for Penn State came at the most perfect time because, as we saw last year, the Ohio State game, it's emotionally and it's physically draining. You've put so much effort into this, and you could have a letdown. Let's go back to 2005 again. Penn State beats Ohio State at home. They go on the road, and a team they should beat in Michigan – they don't beat. They probably should have beaten. They don't beat. Same thing with this one. It's good to have the bye week, win or lose after this Ohio State game, especially after a loss. Let's get some more sleep. Let's get some more treatment done. Come back, much more healthier than we would have on 6 days rest. And we'll put a solid game plan in. And I believe James Franklin, I believe in the coaching staff that they'll have a solid game plan, a much better game plan than they had last year going up to East Lansing to face the Spartans.
I'm with you. Good. I'm with you. All right. Well, Andrew, we ran out of time already. We appreciate you taking time to join us, and we'll see how they respond.
Hey, anytime. As long as we're not using sabermetrics to determine Penn State's lineup and everybody knows what they're playing, it's all good.
We are not. We promise you that. Not here on Philly Press Box Radio anyway.
All right.
All right.
Good, guys.
Thanks,
man.
Appreciate it. Hey, if you're looking for insurance in the tri-state area, we've got a spot for you. Allstate Insurance in Westchester, PA. One of the best benefits of having an Allstate insurance policy is getting a local agent like Dave LaVoy, who is dedicated to you. Building that personal relationship means you can work with someone who knows you and understands your family's needs, someone you can call when you have questions or need help. Dave is dedicated to protecting what's most important to you and your family. Give Dave a call today at 610-430-0700. Hey, Carl, Flyers hockey. I know you're excited about the season started. Tell us what's going on.
Well, I'll probably be up all night, won't be able to sleep. It's a late game tomorrow night, 10 o'clock out in Vegas. And I saw they had an open practice today that was open to the public, which, you know, must have been pretty cool for a lot of Flyer fans, you know, traveling out there. But this is going to be an early test for the Fly Boys to see, you know, to see where they're at. You know, I mean, I think the big question again, just like every year, is going to be goaltending.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you to bring me up to speed because I've actually been out of town and I have lost a little touch of this. How did the final roster work out and how many of the rookies did they end up keeping?
There were Lindblom and I can't pronounce the other guy's name to save the life of me. They got two more young guys. On the squad, they ended up sending Dale Weiss back to the Phantoms, and there were two final cuts, and you know they were veteran players that they released, and I guess they have to clear waivers, and then they can assign them to the Phantoms. But it was I fell short on names, but Dale Weiss was the big name that they ended up scratching. But they're a young hockey team again, got even younger. I know Hextall was talking about that today. They had a little, you know, press conference and, you know, I think he's kind of waiting to see what happens, you know, to see how these lines, you know, gel, you know, you got JVR back in the mix. So it's, you know, I think they've got three solid lines. If everybody stays healthy, you know, they might be actually scoring some goals. So we'll see.
We will see. I did just get a chance to pull this up while you were talking, but I'm not sure it's completely up to date. So we'll have to let it ride by. Gudas and McDonald, they kept both, I assume, right?
Yes. Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And then Robert Haig and Provorov and Sanheim and Gostisbehere.
Yes. They're going with seven defensemen early on because they're carrying a third goaltender. They picked up the kid that was released from Toronto, Picard. I don't know a whole lot about him. I think he played more for the Toronto Marlies than he did the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I think it's an insurance policy. You know, if Elliott is not 100% or Stolarz is not 100%. So, you know, like I said, here we go. Goalie issues again.
Goalie issues. Well, sooner or later, they're going to make the move and they're going to bring the kid up. And it's going to look like that kid, number 11 in green, we're going to have that going on the hockey field ice as well. Coming soon.
Sure. I sure hope
so.
Hey,
what about you mentioned James Van Riemsdyk. What do you expect out of him, and what do you expect out of that Wayne Simmons? I ask every hockey guy we have on the show about Simmons because I really like him, and he just had such a rough year last year with injuries.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was banged up. He had, you know, he had a lot of things going on, and, You know, I mean, you know, a true gritty hockey guy, you know, he sucked it up and gave everything he had, but you could tell he wasn't 100%. And, you know, I mean, you know, he's, I don't think he's a third line player. I really honestly don't, but I mean, that's where he's going to be this year. You know, if things stand the way they are, I mean, I'm a huge Zimmer fan. I love his game. I love his physicality. I just don't think, you know, the Flyers have the right ingredients, you know, as far as using him in the right way. I've felt that all along that they, you know, he needs to be parked out there in front, kind of like what Scott Hartnell did all those years. You know what I mean? And, you know, create havoc in front of the opposing goalie.
Yep. I'm with you. He needs to stay healthy. He's a good player.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, hey, you know, looking forward to the season. We'll be talking a lot of hockey. Baseball's done. Hockey's on. We're going to be talking a lot of hockey. So, but I knew you'd be excited about it, as I am too. So, but hey, Big C, let's talk fantasy football with our resident expert, Fred Hugo. Fred, welcome back. Let's talk some fantasy football. Lots of changes, lots of injuries, a lot going on in the NFL.
What's going on, Bill? Hey, Carl. Nice to see you last weekend or 2 weekends ago. I'm good.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Awesome.
Tell us what's going on in the fantasy football world, Fred. Who are you liking this week?
This week we got a ton of good matchups. It's always the matchups. That Eli Manning killed me last week. I'm done. I'm done with the New York Giants. I'm done with anything that has to do with them offensively. Offensively, anyway. So I'm going to start at the quarterback position, and I'm going to say my first matchup, you get either quarterback in the Steelers-Falcons game. Both pass defenses aren't great, so I would go with Roethlisberger or Matt Ryan. Two other options that I see this week is Alex Smith against the Saints secondary, and then also a sleeper pick that people may not, if you have a quarterback that's injured or on a bye week and you need a waiver wire guy for 1 week, Blake Bortles against the Chiefs defense might be a good pick up for you at quarterback. Moving to the running back spot, I love Christian McCaffrey against the Giants. I also like Melvin Gordon against the Raiders. And another guy that's been on the waiver wire this week, because he just got back last week for Green Bay, is running back Aaron Jones. He had 65 yards and a touchdown last week and 11 carries. And he's facing a Lions defense that's terrible against the run. Zeke ran all over them last week, and every running back really has run all over them. So Aaron Jones. At wide receiver, and this is not going to be a popular one, but until they get it fixed, you got to go against the Eagles secondary. I would start Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs against the Eagles secondary. Right now, they're just not doing well. And every fantasy receiver is feasting. I mean, Corey Davis is a good receiver, but that Tywan Taylor looked like Jerry Rice last week.
Yes, he did.
Also, I like Keenan Allen against the Raiders. And then either one of the Pittsburgh Falcon receivers. You got Calvin Ridley there, Julio Jones, Smith-Schuster, and then Antonio Brown. At tight end, I'm going to just keep riding Zach Ertz. I know Alshon's back, so that gives another weapon for Carson. And Ertz has like 30 catches and over 300 yards through 4 games this year. Keep riding Zach Ertz. Jared Cook of the Raiders against the Chargers is another good pickup this week. And on the waiver wire, he's had a good consistent 3 weeks here. Vance McDonald of the Pittsburgh Steelers, you can pick him up this week and start him. Defensively, and I'm probably going to end up – oh, no, I had it written the wrong way. All right, I thought I picked the Giants here, and I was like, what are you doing? No, I got the Panthers defense against the Giants, and I would go with the Panthers defense. Also, I like the Denver Broncos against the Jets, and then also the Titans defense against the Buffalo Bills. And then at the kicker position, I would go Steven Kostkowski. He's the obvious pick versus the Colts. And then I like Jake Elliott of the Eagles here. He's had a few good weeks here against the Vikings. So as far as my fantasy picks, that's all I have for this week.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Hey, Fred, I have to tell you this because this is pretty cool. Now that we're back on Blog Talk Radio, check this out.
Right. Yeah. I love it.
There you go.
I missed it.
It's time for picks, and it's NFC prediction time again, and we have a caller, so let's bring this caller on and see what this guy or person has to say. Hello, who do we have here?
Hey, y'all, I'm calling from Eastern Tennessee. How you guys doing tonight?
Well, if that doesn't sound like a little bit of Jim Chesko calling to make his predictions, I guess when you're in last place, Fred, you have to call to defend yourself.
Yeah, man. I'm picking up an accent while I'm down here, eating lots of Southern food, and I'm saying y'all to everybody because, you know, it's just a thing you do down here, you know?
Yes, you do. Well, okay, let's get it going. We'll all four of us will pick on these games, so let's do it. And Fred, you're going to open it up, then we'll go with Chet, we'll go Carl, then we'll go me, all right? It's Giants at Carolina. Carolina's minus 7. Dallas at Houston. Houston minus 3. Monday Night Football, Washington at New Orleans. The Saints minus 6.5. And the Vikings come to Lincoln Financial Field to face the Eagles, or the Eagles minus 3. Fred, Giants at Carolina. Carolina minus 7. Have at it.
Carolina's coming off a bye. After, I don't even know what I alluded to it earlier in the fantasy picks, I'm pissed off at the Giants. So I'm just going Panthers on anger, 24-7.
There you go.
All right. I'm not going to pick a score, but, you know, I still think the Giants stink. And as Fred mentioned, Carolina is rested coming off that bye. Got to go Panthers on this one easily.
Carl, who you have?
I can't pick anybody in the East against the Eagles, so it has to be Carolina for me. So that's an easy one.
Well, and I'm going with Chet. Giants still stink. I'm going Carolina in an easy one. Dallas at Houston. Houston minus 3. I was surprised that Houston was the favorite in this game.
Yeah. Well, what's it, the Battle of Texas, as they call it? So you got Zeke. He ran, did well last week. Texas has done pretty good against the running backs against the run. It looked like the offense started to go a little bit last week with Watson and Hopkins. I'm going to take the Texans here. I don't think Dallas is that good. Like I said, I'm not sure how they won last week, really. Zeke was the whole offense. He even led them in receiving. I'm going to go Texans winning this, I don't know, let's say 20-14.
All right. Chet?
You know what? First of all, kudos to you, Bill, because I know it pained you to do it, but you picked the Cowboys last week. And they did win, and you pulled a game up on Fred and two up on me now. So you picked the Cowboys. I know it made your stomach a little sick to do it, but you got that one right. So kudos to you. Big credit. This week, though, I'm going with the Texans because anytime there's a chance the Cowboys are going to lose, I'm probably going to pick against them. So Cowboys lose. That's my pick.
All right.
And, you know, following suit in the East, the Cowboys still suck, so I'll go with Houston.
Well, and I'll tell you what, I don't ever like to go against J.J. Watt because he's maybe one of my very favorite players in the National Football League right now, but the Dallas Cowboys are going to win this game.
Wow.
There you go. Just telling it the way it is. There we go. Washington at New Orleans, the Saints. Minus 6.5, Fred.
Redskins are on the road. I think our offense will be able to keep up with the Saints a little bit, but the offense, the Saints are just too much. They got Ingram coming back as well. So I'm going to say the Saints win this in a high-scoring game. Let's go 33-27.
Drew Brees is going to set some more records this week, move up in the NFL, you know, archives, and Saints are going to win this one easily. I'm going to say by at least 10. So Saints take this one.
Well, I got to stay with my Eastern Conference. So Washington's in it. So I got to go with New Orleans.
Yeah, and I'm going to go shootout as well. I'm going to take the Saints at home in a loud dome. The Saints are off to a good start. They're already 3-1. They're going to be tough, and we have to go down there here later in the season. I'm not looking forward to that game. I'm going to take the Saints over Washington in this one as well. Okay, Vikings at the Eagles. Eagles minus three. Fred.
Eagles are 2-2, but the Vikings aren't that good either. I think last week was a punch in the face, a little bit of a wake-up call there. I think Doug's going to come out with a more balanced offense, not throw the ball so much. And I don't think the defensive adjustments are going to be there. Kirk Cousins is still going to be able to throw, but I think we're going to score more points. The offense is going to look a lot better. I'm going to take the Eagles winning this one 34-24.
You know, I'm starting to agree with Fred. I'm agreeing with Fred way too much this year, but I know the Vikings have revenge on their mind, but they have not been playing all that great so far this year. The Eagles, as Fred mentioned, had that tough loss, so they're going to bounce back from that, I think. It's not going to be a blowout like we saw last January 21st, but the Eagles will win this one, and I'm picking a score of 31-20 Eagles.
I'm staying with the hometown team. I think the fans are going to be rocking the link this week. They got a lot of energy built up in that loss from last week. So I don't see the Eagles doing anything but good things on both sides of the ball this week. So a lot of points, a lot of defense. You know, the birds will be back on the front page this week.
Well, and I'm certainly going to go Eagles in this as well, because I've never been sold on the Vikings. I wasn't sold on them last year either. But I do think it's going to be a little bit closer. I'm going to go 23-20 Eagles at home. So we'll see. They need to win. All right. And with that, we appreciate you, Mr. Chesko, joining us. And Fred, we appreciate you coming on as well. We'll do it again next week.
All right.
Sounds good.
Have
see
a good
you guys.
Rest of the show.
All right. Chet, drive safe.
Yep. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All
thanks,
right.
Chet.
Yep.
All right. Let's give a shout out to the PPCC 118 Raz Room. They post great sports memorabilia on their Facebook page so people can take a chance on winning something they may not be able to afford or help or have access to. Right now, they have a Tim Tebow helmet as well as a Brian Dawkins mini helmet up there. All items comes with certificates of authenticity. They've continued to run out great autographed memorabilia from all the Philly sports teams and more. There are only 21 lines available, so your chances of winning are 1 in 21. Pretty good odds. Check out the Facebook page, like it or follow it. It's PPCC 118 Raz Room. That's right. PPCC 118 Raz Room on Facebook. Hey, Carl, we've completed our change back over here to Blog Talk Radio as of tonight from our wildfire experiment. So we're here, and we're planning to hold this 7:30 Wednesday spot from now on. So plan on joining us. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. And we will have guests next week. Carl, you'll like this one. Sam Carcitti will be talking Flyers. And Arkansas Fred Barnett will be back to talk Eagles with us next week.
Very nice. Very nice.
Two good ones, that's for sure. We also want to let our listeners know and remind our loyal listeners to visit our Philly Press Box Radio website, phillypressboxradio.com. We cover all the big stories of the Philly sports teams, write a few articles ourselves, and you can listen to our last two podcasts and our latest Vimeo as well. We still have our sponsor banners going across the top. Click on the Irish Rover Station House, Bob Sullivan's LikeYourAge.com, and Allstate Insurance of Westchester, Dave LaVoy banner as well, to go directly to their website. Remember, it's PhillyPressBoxRadio.com. Hey, Carl, we're running out of time. Do you have any crap we forgot?
We covered a lot. That was a fast hour. We covered up a lot. I have one question for you.
Okay.
What is the not sure how to word it, but how many games is Gabe Kapler going to get at the start of the 2019 season Is he on the hot seat, and how many games will we see him as manager before they pull the plug?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think it's going to really depend on who shows up here. Who are the free agents that we have? What's this roster going to look like? And I was going to mention to you earlier when we were talking Phillies, and I was afraid we were going to run out of time, so I skipped over it. You know, it almost sounds like they've already given Santana the third base job, Hoskins the first base job, and there's a, you know, Mikel Franco has not always been my favorite guy, but he's a 25-year-old player who responded this year and maybe was one of their best offensive players. It sounds like he certainly looks like an odd man out. And who else isn't going to be here?
Well, like I said, I don't think you can continue to, you know, play around with another year of Scott Kingery being bounced around. I think he needs to be at second base, and I think Caesar is still serviceable, and you should be able to get a decent prospect or possibly, you know, a serviceable bench player, you know, unless they package a couple of guys. But I really honestly think they're going to move some players. I think you're going to see a few trades.
Yeah, sure. I do too. And I think, you know, in that interview with Cataldi, he was talking about Kingery as the shortstop, which then gives you the J.P. Crawford situation. So, you know, you got two young guys who both are thought to be very high prospects. Well, you know, there's got to be room for both of them. If they're able to get Harper or one of those, Machado, I mean, if they get one of them, that shakes everything back up.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that we really haven't had much chance to talk about on the show, because we just haven't had the time, but one of the things that really bothers me about how this thing is all played out and with Kapler is, you know, these guys, you're trying to make everybody, in my opinion, trying to make everybody into robots. You know, and I think Odubel is the biggest point of all that. The guy's a free swinger. He can hit line drives. And I've said all along, he's the only guy on this roster that can hit 300. Well, they took the bat out of the guy's hands. They made him stand there and look at pitches and take pitches that were pitches he wants to hack at. Now he's a 260 hitter whose value is next to nothing. And I just feel like they killed the guy. They hurt the guy bad this year.
Yeah, he didn't adapt, and, you know, he wasn't able to, you know, to buy into what they were selling. You could see that just about it. Every at bat, he was not comfortable.
Yeah, and you know, and I think something else that I really want to see how it plays out is they cleaned house on the hitting instructors in the minor leagues, because of philosophy issues. So we'll see how it plays out, but. Hey, we're down to having to close out. We'll talk some more about that. But we want to thank our special guest, you, Mr. Carl Henderson, Andrew Kalista, Fred Hugo, our sponsors, Iris Rover Station House, Bob Sullivan's LakeYourAge.com, PPCC 118 Raz Room, and Dave Avoy of Allstate Insurance in Westchester for their continued support of the show. So for Jim Chetchesco, who will be back next week, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday, October 10th at 7:30 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. You can also find our podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, and Google Play. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.